This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, Avani Dias here. This is the Hack Podcast, and let's be honest, the news has been so grim lately, so we're going to get a bit of a good vibe going because young people are turning to gardening to get through it all. We're going to talk to Costa from Gardening Australia. He's just such a legend. We're going to learn about how to get into gardening and why it makes us feel so good. And after the Euro 2020 Football Cup, English players, three of them, they were all black. They copped heaps of racist abuse online. And they made a direct call along with heaps of other people to platforms like Instagram to stop this kind of abuse from occurring because sports people from all different backgrounds face so much of it. So soon we're going to talk to a footballer who's dealt with this issue because Instagram has launched new tools that are meant to deal with this problem. First though, religious discrimination.
Hack. Freedom of religion, the paradigm freedom of conscience, is the essence of a free society.
On Triple J.
Steph Lentz is a dedicated English teacher and she worked at a Christian school. But when she came out as a lesbian, she was told she won't be going to heaven and the school sacked her. And that sacking was completely legal. Religious organisations like Christian schools are allowed to discriminate against people in this way under the law. I'd love to hear if you've experienced this. Call me. Have you been sacked or spoken to by your employer because of your sexuality? 1300 055 36. Call in. We're going to talk to Steph soon. But the federal government is floating a new law that could make this kind of thing more common. Shalila Medora is going to explain how it'll work.
Remember this guy?
Well, good morning, everyone.
While same-sex marriage laws were being debated back in 2017, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull announced a review into religious freedom laws. Here's Reverend Dr. Eleni Poulos from the University of Macquarie. She's just done her PhD on the politics of religious freedom in Australia, and she happens to be an ordained minister in the Uniting Church.
It was a concession to the conservative hard right in Liberal National Parties who were unhappy with the marriage equality legislation.
The aim of the review was to establish if our laws allowed people of faith in Australia to practice that faith freely. And as Professor George Williams from the University of New South Wales said a few years ago, there aren't a lot of federal laws in place now to protect religious freedoms.
My view is that Australia should have strong protection for religious belief. It's missing, it needs to be remedied.
And when this guy took over in 2019...
Good morning, everyone.
It's Scott Morrison, by the way. He brought a second version of that religious freedom bill to the public. And Professor Williams said it goes too far.
What they do is, in fact, go beyond protecting people on the basis of their religious beliefs to actually giving a licence to discriminate.
The new bill would give religious organisations like schools or aged care providers or hospitals the ability to hire and fire people based on faith. It would give medical professionals the right to refuse care to a patient if they don't agree with the procedure or intervention, like abortion or the morning after pill, for example. It would also give people more freedom to say things that others might consider insulting or offensive if it's part of their strongly held beliefs. Equality Australia put out an ad with a few examples too.
My way to telling me that my relationship is an abomination in God's eyes.
My support worker telling me that disability is caused by the devil.
It's not okay for my nurse to tell me that HIV is a punishment from God.
And while that second version of the bill came out more than 2.5 years ago, it doesn't mean it's dead and buried. In fact, just last month, Attorney General Michaelia Cash said the government would be putting out a third version by the end of this year.
I'd like to see it scaled back a lot. The problem with the second version is that it privileges religious belief and statements of belief above everything else. So it seeks to override all other Commonwealth anti-discrimination laws and other state-based discrimination laws.
With fewer and fewer people describing themselves as religious in Australia, this could end up becoming a very controversial policy. And it'll likely come up for debate just before an election. We've got to wait and see if Labor supports it when the bill finally does make it to Parliament. But it wasn't super keen on the older versions. So who knows if it'll actually pass and become law?
I think it has the potential to backfire on the government. I think Australians are pretty supportive of the need to protect religious freedom, but they're also supportive of the need for other people, people with disabilities, women, LGBTQI people, you know, to be free from discrimination.
Hack on Triple J.
Shalala Medora with that story. A lot of people texting in some pretty full-on stories. Scar from Melton says, I worked with the Victoria Police and my sergeant asked if I was seeing a psychologist for my gay issues. No one believed she'd say that. It's really awful. Someone else says, discrimination like this should prevent organisations from receiving government funding. Yeah, I'd love to know if you face this kind of discrimination based on your sexuality from your employer or from another religious organisation maybe. Text in 0439 757 555. Let's talk to Steph Lentz. So she was an English teacher at the Covenant Christian School in Sydney and she was sacked after she came out. Thanks for coming on Hack. Really appreciate you chatting to us.
Thanks so much for having me, Abadi.
So Steph, why did you decide to teach at a Christian school?
I have been a person of faith for a really long time and for me, the opportunity to work at Covenant Christian School came up immediately after I finished my degree and I'd heard really great things about the people that I would be working with there. And so I was really keen to get involved and I actually had a really, really positive experience in many ways working there. And at the time as well, I was in a heterosexual marriage and a lot of the things that I have since opened up to with myself and also shared with other people were things that I'd really sort of suppressed and buried, and I'd experienced a lot of internal homophobia that I then came to deal with later when I was already employed at the school.
Yeah, and Steph, tell us what happened when you came out to your school.
I approached the school and I told them that I had come to terms with my own sexuality and that I'd done a lot of thinking and reflecting about what that meant for my faith. And I came to them with a very utterly thorough case. The fact there is no reconcilable contradiction or incompatibility between being queer and being a person of faith, being a Christian. And that sort of prompted a 3 to 4 months correspondence between the school and myself, which ultimately resulted in them saying they did not agree with me, that it was actually incompatible, that it was irreconcilable, and that's why they fired me.
Steph, that's really full on and we're going to get more of your thoughts in a second, but I want to hear from Paris from Wollongong, who's faced a similar kind of thing as well. What happened to you, Paris?
Hey, so I was working at this Catholic school regularly in Campbelltown, and the position came open to actually take the class full time. So I went for an interview and they were really happy to have me and the priest was there. And during the interview, the priest actually asked me my perspective on the yes vote. Not even that I'm part of the queer community, he just asked me my perspective and I said, well, I'm for it. You know, I've got family members and friends and that I feel like there should be a relationship between the church and the queer community. And they said, you're going to hell. I can't believe you believe that. You're not welcome at our school.
Wow.
You should not be working here. And if a student asked you, and that was your response and that wouldn't be welcome. So that was it and I'm no longer able to work there.
That's so full on. And so before you worked there, had they ever indicated that that was going to be an issue?
Never. Never even had been brought up. Nothing had been said. I knew other teachers had hinted that the priest was quite, I guess, old school, but never had anything in that regards been referenced before, no.
And Paris, how do you feel about the fact that this religious discrimination bill, you know, it's being floated, it could come into law very soon, and it could mean that this kind of thing is more common. But a lot of people say, you know, it's fair enough for Christian schools or religious organisations to have these kinds of views. What do you think about that?
I think it's quite sad. I think a lot of people in the Christian community already don't feel like they belong. And having something like this will just warrant more and more discrimination and push those people even further out of their faith. It's quite disappointing, really. You know, even as a person of faith myself, I feel in shock that other people are going to face that discrimination and be turned away like Steph has been from their faith. I don't know. It's quite disheartening.
Yeah, I can imagine. Paris, really appreciate you calling in. Let's go back to Steph. So obviously the school has said that you can't work there anymore. I mean, that would have been really heartbreaking for you as someone who is of faith and wanted to work there.
Yeah, it was really difficult. I mean, immediately afterwards, I experienced a lot of mental health impacts because of the discrimination and the sadness and the grief that I was experiencing. It was also really tricky because I lost a lot of relationships with people who see this this issue of sexuality as sort of a really clear line in the sand. And if you don't agree on it, they struggle to be in relationship with you. And so, yeah, the impacts were many, and they were something I felt really deeply.
I can only imagine, Stefan, it's just awful that it's happened. I mean, how do you think your students felt about it? Were there any who are LGBTQI who may have felt really othered or left out because of this decision?
Yeah, it's a really great point, because I think one of the reasons I decided to go through with engaging with the school so deeply on the matter and putting my case forward is because I wanted to advocate for the students that I know struggle to feel safe and at home and comfortable in a Christian school because of their sexuality or their gender identity. And so it's something that's really close to my heart, that Christian schools are a place that parents can choose to send their kids in order to uphold their values and their religious preferences, but that those Christian schools are nevertheless a place that is safe for queer kids to be, and a place that provides the support that they need to come to terms with who they are in a healthy way.
For sure. Let's speak to one of those students now. India from Melbourne has called in. What happened to you with your Catholic school?
Yeah, hi. So I went to a Catholic school from about like prep to year 10. And I went to a very private, prestigious Catholic school from about year 7 to year 8. And when I was in year 8, I had a girlfriend at the time. I was openly, you know, let everyone know that I was queer and stuff like that. And I experienced a lot of bullying at the school. And instead of the school kind of taking, you know, telling the bullies to stop and things, I was actually asked to leave the school due to not holding the same values as the school.
Wow. So you were asked to leave effectively because of your sexuality.
Yeah, so I was a little, like, you know, year 8 girl, hanging out with my girlfriend at the time and getting extremely bullied. And I was, asked to leave because I didn't uphold the Christian values.
That's so full on, India. I can only imagine how that feels as a 13-year-old. I mean, looking back on it now and hearing what Steph has dealt with, so many people have dealt with it on the text line as well. I mean, do you think religious schools should be operating like this?
No, definitely not. I think it's just such poor behaviour from Christian schools when, you know, their mottos are usually like, you know, respect and love and kindness, but that wasn't love or respect or kindness what they showed me in any way. And a lot of other queer kids that I went to school with, they just got, you know, bullied, and when it got brought up in conversation, it was just kind of swept under the rug.
India, really appreciate you chatting, and, you know, a lot of people listening to this will feel like, you know, they're not alone in the experiences that they've faced, so appreciate you calling in.
Thanks, my pleasure.
Steph, you know, people like India have dealt with this. So many people on the text line have dealt with it. But some people are saying Christian organisations, religious organisations should be allowed to make decisions over who works in these places. What do you think about that?
I can definitely understand the argument there. And I do think that protecting freedom of religion is something that is really important. And that's why this religious discrimination bill that's under discussion at the moment needs to be thought through really carefully, because we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. But I do think that a contemporary, well-informed investigation of whether or not it's actually legitimate and necessary to maintain that Christian schools and other religious organisations need to exclude LGBTQIA people, I think that's the thing that really needs to be discussed, because it's possible to respect freedom of religion and to respect the rights of these organisations to employ people who uphold their values, whilst also updating our understanding of the fact that queerness and faith are not incompatible.
Steph, really appreciate you chatting to us about this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hack.
Instagram announced new features, which will mean accounts who send abuse will be disabled quicker.
On Triple J.
You are listening to Hack on Triple J, and a few weeks ago, when England lost the Euro 2020 football final, three black players were targeted by hundreds of racist comments on social media. One of the players, Bukayo Saka, posted on Instagram afterwards and he said, "Your powerful platforms are not doing enough to stop these messages." Instagram didn't block any of the posts, and heaps of Aussie sports players have copped all kinds of abuse like this on Instagram and Twitter recently as well. So now Instagram has launched new tools which are meant to deal with this problem. You can now limit comments and messages when there's a spike of increased attention. Anyone can use this feature, but Instagram says it was built with athletes in mind. I'd love to know if you've dealt with any of this sort of abuse on Instagram. Would this tool help you? 0439757555. Text in. Let's talk to Adelaide United player Kusini Yenge because he's faced this. Thanks for coming back on Hack.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So in March, you scored your first ever goal in the A-League. It was such an amazing moment. You posted about it on social media and then you got this sort of barrage of racist comments. You spoke to us on Hack about it at the time. But can you just recap, I mean, what was that like for you, receiving all those comments?
Yeah, obviously it wasn't a very enjoyable experience. It kind of all started straight away after the game when I walked into the change rooms. People weren't just commenting on the post that I made later on about me scoring my first goal, but also previous comments, previous posts that I'd made, they were commenting on that during the game in the moment. So obviously it wasn't very nice walking into the change rooms and seeing all these messages popping up, these racist comments and stuff like that.
Yeah, and then a few months later, you know, these three England players received the same kind of abuse after they lost the final, the Euro 2020. Did that feel familiar? What did you think when that was playing out?
Yeah, for sure. I could understand how they were feeling. Obviously, the magnitude of the scenario they were in is a lot higher and a lot bigger than mine. But obviously, I could relate because I experienced a very similar outcome to what they did.
And obviously, Instagram has now launched this tool. So basically, you can limit comments and messages coming into your inbox. Would that have helped you at the time?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's one way to start. Because in the situation that I had a lot of family members and stuff that were contacting me and messaging me through Instagram to congratulate me on the goal and all of everything that I'd accomplished during that game. But I really didn't want to go look in my message request because I had also lots of racial comments and stuff like that coming in from people who were watching the game. So, yeah, bringing in a tool like this will help a lot of athletes that want to be able to feel comfortable using Instagram, the platform, without having to see these you know, embarrassing and racist comments.
Yeah, and another thing Instagram's announced is that, you know, if its algorithm picks up that someone's about to post a racist comment, then a message will pop up saying, you know, this might breach Instagram's community guidelines. Do you think that'll actually stop these people from making these kind of comments?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I think ultimately the goal is obviously to make people think a different way and not want to make these comments. Obviously, what Instagram's bringing in is a step towards that, I guess, and it's going to help athletes not be able to see these messages, but people, I'm sure, are still going to be sending those messages in. They'll just be filtered so that us athletes don't have to, you know, face those messages. So, yeah, it's a step in the right direction, I guess, but ultimately the goal would be to make people think a different way and make people not want to actually make these comments. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. I mean, I don't know what the answer is to this, but, you know, you might know. How do we change that kind of thinking? Because that's obviously the root cause, right?
Yeah, for sure. And it's a very difficult topic and I don't think anyone really has an answer to it. I'm not sure if there isn't a singular answer. Everyone thinks that it could be the way you're growing up, the way that you're brought up with your parents and stuff like that, but I'm not too sure. I'm still learning about racism myself. You know, although I've experienced it, I'm still learning about different types of racism and how it all works. So it's not a thing that can just change over the night, you know, with this new feature that Instagram's bringing in. It's not just going to make everything magically fix. But, yeah, I think just sharing love and teaching each other and learning from one another and experiencing other cultures is one way to start with accepting others and not wanting to make these racial comments about one another.
Yeah, and a few people listening may have copped this kind of abuse as well on a different scale. I've certainly dealt with it on my own social media. I mean, you chose to call it out when it happened to you. I remember you told us that your mum actually said, you know, draw attention to this because you weren't going to say anything. I mean, how do you grapple with that kind of decision to try and call it out but then not draw too much attention to it? It's just such a fine line, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think for me, you know, I'm pretty confident in myself, and the messages, although they were a bit annoying and I didn't really like seeing them, made me a bit upset. I was able to deal with them and push them to the side and focus on my sport. But there may be others that aren't as strong as me or don't have the confidence or the support around them, because I was lucky I had my family real close to me and they all supported me. So someone that might not have that type of support or not be that mentally strong to be able to push those things aside, I just want to help them in the future and try to deal with things that so that they don't have to experience these things in the future.
For sure. Cassini Yangi, striker from Adelaide United, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and some strong words there. I think, you know, there's a message there for everyone to stop sort of posting this kind of thing. But in the meantime, there's a push for companies like Instagram to be doing more.
Hack. There's something about just having your hands in the soil and watching all these living things.
On Triple J.
All right, the news has been so grim with all the climate change doom, lockdowns, coronavirus. We're all figuring out how to get through it and deal with it. Young people are taking up gardening, which, to be honest, feels like something that used to be an old lady thing, but it's a pandemic. Anything goes at the moment. And research shows gardening makes us feel good, productive. It gives us nicer spaces as well. If you've been getting into gardening or you've got questions about it, we're going to speak to Costa from Gardening Australia soon. So text me 0439757555. Research shows young people all over the world are getting into gardening more than ever. And Tamsin Rose is one of those people.
Got all sorts of things growing at the moment. Always have little bits of radishes everywhere because they're so easy to grow from seeds.
Claire Stein is walking me through her beautiful, productive sharehouse veggie patch in Mianjin in Brisbane.
That little blank bit there is going to be some mixed salad greens. I only planted those seeds like a week ago. So every time I plant a seed, I think it's going to fail.
She hasn't been gardening all that long, but she loves it. She's actually a cookbook author, which was part of why she started growing her own food.
This forest of basil. All my housemates just love basil to life.
They smell good.
Yeah. Also, we just eat so much basil that I'm like, guys, no more pesto for a while. We have to let the basil grow back.
The garden has become an important part of her life.
There have been times when it's been literally the thing that I wake up in the morning and think about. I'm like, gotta water the garden. I wonder how the tomatoes are doing. It's good for, yeah, dealing with some of those bigger things with depression and anxiety.
And science backs that up.
I think gardens are one way that people can have that restful experience. Also, just have a bit of fun and take your mind off it. It can feel good to produce something.
Dr. Simon Lush is a clinical psychologist who uses horticulture therapy and gardens in his practice. He says there's growing evidence we should all be spending more time near plants.
To activate what's called the parasympathetic nervous system, which is our calming response after we've been stressed out. These cues come from nature, so from green environments.
Research done during the lockdown in the UK found 83% of 18 to 34-year-olds described gardening as cool, which is good news for me. Since moving to Brisbane for this job, we've gone into two lockdowns. A new city in lockdown with no mates. So I've been putting heaps of my energy and time into setting up a little potted garden.
Chilies are coming along really nicely. Anyway, I'll give them a water because you need to love them and care for them.
When we can't travel at all, gardening is like a little holiday for our minds.
Gardens allow our attention to be more in a restful, playful, what's often called soft fascination. So our attention just has a bit of a holiday. It can drift to attending to tasks, feeling the soil, touching leaves.
And if that IPCC climate report really freaked you out, gardening could help too. just a teeny bit.
A lot of people are concerned around climate change at the moment, so that's another aspect of feeling like you might be making a contribution to the environment.
Dr. Simon says you don't need a big space to reap the benefits of getting dirty.
It's always possible to grow things on windowsills. It's possible to grow things on balconies. I've seen amazing things done in small balconies.
Community gardens like those run by Al from Growing Forward, which is a community garden collective in Brisbane, are also a great option.
Yeah, the kale's going wild at the moment. Do you like kale?
Al says there's been a heap of extra interest since COVID hit.
Heaps of people always come up and chat to us and ask if they can get involved. So there's definitely, since the pandemic, there's definitely been like a massive shift.
And Al sees the garden as a symbol of hope.
You can see the community itself grow as well, to put in their time and their resources and giving that food away for free to people who need it most, which is a really beautiful thing. It shows that we can look after each other. We can give mutual aid to each other.
Hack on Triple J.
Tamsin Rose with that story. A lot of people getting into gardening. I'm 21, working in my veggie patch, got me through all of the lockdowns in 2020. Someone else, I've been collecting different seeds on my lockdown walks and germinating them. It's helped me get through the dark times. Yeah, I'd love to know your gardening stories. 0439 757 555. Text in. Costa from Gardening Australia is here. If you don't know who I'm talking about for whatever reason, then just think of the beard. Because, yeah, it's so iconic. Costa, thanks for coming on Hack.
Haven't he? Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
Thought we lost you for a second. Hey, look at this text from Andy. Gardening has become popular because of Costa. Who can say no to that luscious beard and long, sexy hair? Costa made gardening great. Big fans on the text line.
Thanks, Andy. I'm blushing under here. I'm blushing.
Hey, Costa, why does gardening make us feel good? So many young people are getting into it.
Well, I think you heard it there in your interviews. The bit that really stands out was where one of the people said, you know, when I wake up and I go out there, and this reminds me of this 100-year-old, this incredible 100-year-old lady who's been gardening for 70 years in this one garden, and she says she wakes up in the morning and the first thing she does, and this is at 100, Avani, 100 years old, she walks out barefoot into the garden because she wants to look at what needs to be done. And that sort of summed up what was said earlier about it wakes you up. It gives you hope. You think about what you did yesterday, what's coming tomorrow. You're not thinking about the gloom and doom. You're actually looking at what's happening right before your eyes. And that kind of, it's not just about growing plants. It's seeding hope. It's seeding this vision and a kind of process of what needs to be done and what else can I do and how can I add to it. And then when you do get some produce that you share or you pickle or you ferment or you turn into a salad or like the salad greens or a pesto, and then you have a pasta and you say to someone, oh, this was what I made with my hands and this has been in for 3 months and look at it now. I mean, that is what makes it so worthwhile.
Yeah, it sounds so good. I mean, to be honest, Costa, I suck at gardening. Any plant that I have is basically dead. What is your advice for someone like me who is just a total, just doesn't know anything about gardening? What's like a good entry-level way to get into it?
Okay, so we've got to immediately surgically remove the personal shaming. we got to change that vocabulary.
Okay.
Because what I'll say is you have had problems in the past, but now you're moving on. That baggage is left.
This is like
the
actual therapy, not like a gardening segment.
Yeah, it is,
you
therapy.
Know?
This is horticultural therapy.
Yeah.
Welcome. Just sit back on the lounge and just let it all out. Let all that baggage is out. And now you just do it step by step, and don't sort of think about, oh, I've got brown thumbs, I've never done, I've always failed. It's like, okay, what can I do? And it's about piecing it together bit by bit, starting small, having one pot, growing a few salad greens that were mentioned earlier. And radishes are really easy, but salad leaves are really simple to grow. They just need, five hours minimum.
Okay.
A day, and you'll get them growing. And then you start to pick the outside leaves and put them in a bowl and add something else to it. And then you go, wow, look at that. And then
it sounds great, Costa. We're going to hit the news, but I appreciate you chatting to us, and you'll be on Gardening Australia soon, right?
Next week? We're back right through till Christmas. We start up again on Friday night.
Awesome. So, that's all we've got time for in this episode of Hack. I'll catch you on the next one.